This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. On the program today, our monthly look at computers. Today, we welcome back to the program science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg writes two columns for the newspaper in addition to his reporting. He writes these columns about computing. They run on Mondays. One is a question and answer column, the other a column featuring useful and interesting websites. Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month now on the third Monday of the month. Listeners, you can join us with questions about computers. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. So Vista is about to launch, coming down the pike. When in January now? Is that the
Well,
is
that's
that
what
firm?
They're saying. Yeah. Evidently, they're claiming that yes, it's finally going to happen. That Windows Vista is going to be out probably around the first of the year. Yeah, yeah. It's not going to make the holidays, but they'll give you a little coupon for it if you buy a computer for the holidays without it in there.
Okay. What's the early word on Vista?
Well, I've been reading some the last couple of weeks about they came out with the latest beta or test version of it, which is a pretty finished version, obviously, if they're going to have it out by the end of the year here. And I'd say the verdict is mixed. Some people like it. It appears to have some better security features that will everybody will welcome. You know, if you if you've suffered through some of the security problems with Windows, it's probably. I happen to think that Windows XP is a pretty stable version of Windows, but it's probably got some things in it that people will appreciate from a stability standpoint. You know, being able to leave your computer on and without having to restart it to flush things out because they're bogging it down, or without seeing error messages and that kind of thing. At least the old ones that you used to see. If you've got the computer to run it, the computing power to run it, it's got a real pretty face with some nice widgets and whatnot that people will probably have some fun with. On the other hand, it's going to take a pretty hefty collection of computing resources to run it. If you don't buy a legitimate copy of it and register it with Microsoft, it's going to essentially mostly turn itself off after 30 days, and some people are not too happy about that whole thing. But we'll have to see.
Yeah.
I'd say about it the same thing I would say about any new operating system, whether Microsoft was making it or somebody else. Unless you are an adventuresome person who just likes to be out there on the cutting or bleeding, depending on how you look at it, edge. I wouldn't mess around with the 1.0 version, and I'd probably wait for at least the first service pack, and which is the big collection of bug fixes that Microsoft typically issues in a new operating system like this, or maybe even the second service pack.
How long does it take before a service pack or two comes out?
It usually doesn't take. It'll probably be something like 6 months or in that nature. I'm trying to remember how long it took with Windows XP, but it takes a little while. But I'd say they'll probably issue interim fixes. You know, service packs are big collections of of bug fixes, and they'll be issuing little fixes in between that time. Even if the first service pack is not out in 6 months, that maybe after 6 months, if you're kind of want to get out there and start in with it, you might be okay. But I'd wait 6 months and maybe a year. if it took that. The thing, the situation is that when you go to buy a new computer, after Windows Vista comes out, you're pretty much going to get it, whether whether you like it or not, unless you buy from some place where you can, you know, pick your operating system to be installed. But generally, if you're going to go, you know, to a big box store or that just, you know, sells stock configurations, you're going to end up getting it whether you really like it or not. So the people who have a decision to make are the people that are deciding whether they want to upgrade from Windows XP or not. And if I were those people, that's when I wait. You know, I'd wait for some of the bug fixes to come back down the pike, and probably for the first service pack.
Yeah. What if you're looking at buying a new machine and you want to say, well, maybe, you know, down the line I'll want to put Vista on it. And given that it needs more oomph.
Right.
To use a technical term, what kind of machine do you need to have, you know, to be able to run Vista?
Well, here's Microsoft's minimum stated support requirements. So an 800 megahertz processor, all right? And I'm telling you that if you're going to try to run it on an 800 megahertz processor, you're crazy. You know, that you better have it at least a gigahertz processor, and I think you want a lot more than that, you know. Couple gigahertz, 2.5, 3, something in that neighborhood, which, you know, if you're buying a new computer and thinking ahead to that, you're probably not going to buy a computer with an 800 megahertz processor in it anyway. So you'll probably be okay there. Their minimum RAM system memory, they say 512 megabytes. Well, I'm telling you, twice that. You know, you better have a gigabyte, and you might want to think about 2, you know. But the thing is that, you know, that used to be an expensive proposition to get that amount of RAM. Now it's not, you know, it's less than $100. So that's certainly, and when people are buying a computer in general these days, I almost always advise, look, if you're going to invest money somewhere, invest it in more RAM. It's a good, it'll make your experience a lot smoother if you do that. So I'd say a gigabyte of RAM. You can run this on built-in graphics, but again, you're probably better off having a separate graphics card that has 128 or 256 megabytes of its own memory, particularly if you're going to want to use the pretty things that are in Windows Vista, all those things that make it look really nice. They make it look really nice, and I think in some ways they enhance the user experience. But the flip side is that they also take a lot of resources to run, right? So it's nice to have a separate graphics card and nice to have its own memory, 128, 256, which again is not excessively uncommon at this point. The minimum hard drive space, free hard drive space they're talking about is 20 gigabytes to install it and 15 gigabytes to hold it. That's you're probably going to have that anyway. If you're getting a new computer, it's going to have a big hard drive. You know, it's going to be 160 gigabytes or 250 gigabytes or any more 500 gigabytes. You should have ample room in there to put it in. And, of course, you need an optical drive, a DVD or a CD drive to put it in as well.
And with all this stuff under the hood, what are you looking at in terms of a price tag for a desktop?
Oh, that's not excessively expensive at this time. Well under $1,000, you can configure
Isn't
a machine
amazing?
Like that. Yeah, it's really changed. You know, we talk about having... I just happen to have just bought a new computer myself, although this was a new Mac in my array. I'm not due for a new Windows machine for a while, and that's good because then I can wait for Vista to get refined. But I had 2 gigabytes of RAM put in it, and I was joking around with somebody the other day about about a decade ago. I had 8 megabytes of RAM put in a computer to cost me $350, you know, and now I think I got the 2 gigabytes for $100, you know. So things have changed, and That's a good thing.
Yeah. Greg Klein is with us this afternoon. He is science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. He's here this afternoon to answer our questions about computers. You can join us with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener now on line four. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What can we do for you?
Okay. To get off of Vista, I use a laptop, and my laptop's getting pretty full, and so I want to get an external hard drive to load my pictures onto. Can you give me any recommendations on what I need to be looking for?
Ma'am, what kind of laptop do you have? You run Windows, right?
I run Windows.
Windows XP?
Yeah.
And how recently did you buy that laptop?
It's 2 years old.
It's 2 years old. So you've got, you should have USB 2.
No.
You don't?
It didn't. I thought I got USB 2 and it came with one.
Okay. Well, that's
a problem.
That makes it a little harder because if you look around, you could find a USB 1.1 hard drive. The thing is that it won't be excessively fast, because you're running through kind of a smaller pipeline there.
Does that thing already driving me crazy? I keep thinking about buying a new computer, but there's nothing wrong with it.
Right. Know? Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If it does what you want to do,
it gave me. I thought I had ordered USB 2, but it only has one.
Okay. Now, what brand is it,
it's Compaq.
Okay, so it probably doesn't have a FireWire what Sony calls, I think, iLink. That's a fast kind of connection.
No, I had a FireWire card from my old laptop, but I gave it away with the laptop.
Okay, well, that's...
It was on a PC card.
Okay, yeah, and those were the options that the option that I'd suggest. Do you have a card slot in that in your current laptop?
I do have a PC card slot.
Yeah, so probably what you're going to want to do is to get a card with a USB 2 or a FireWire connection.
Okay.
And then any USB or FireWire hard drive would be fine for you.
Okay.
Is there some other question you have about that?
Well, no, I didn't know you could get a USB on a PC card.
I'm sure you can, yeah.
So I guess I'll go out maybe even yet this afternoon and do some exploring because I've got this thing. It's only a 40 gig, and it's practically full, which, slows down its operating. In fact, a little bit ago, I had to shut it down and turn it back on because it was running so slow. It just messes up. Simply because I only got 556 of RAM, so that was another mistake I made.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty. Do you have 256? You mean?
No, I have half.
512. Oh, 128.
512.
512. Well, that's not bad.
That's the way I try to make this computer work. I need about 5 gig of.
Well, that should be 512 is adequate for running Windows XP and doing okay. Hey, let me say one other thing, okay? Have you thought about just getting another hard drive and replacing your 40 gigabyte hard drive with a much larger hard drive?
The laptop they keep telling me that is so awkward and expensive to do.
You might, the drive itself shouldn't cost very much. It might cost you to have somebody pop it open and put it in there for
precisely,
you.
Precisely.
You might check into that and see, what somebody would do that for.
Yeah, well, I could check on that.
It may be, as time has gone on, laptop companies have gotten better about constructing their laptops to make that not as burdensome as it used to be.
Okay.
And it may be, that you could get a bigger hard drive and have somebody put it in for about the same or even less than it might cost you to buy a card and a hard drive.
Card and a drive. Well, I'll check into that. I hate buying a new computer, which I've thought about doing, but, boy, laptops, by the time you get into high gigs on the hard drive, they start jacking the price up like you can't. I can't believe.
Well, everything's smaller, and those smaller parts cost you more.
Yeah, and I have to have a laptop because I'm on the road. I travel half the year, so.
Yeah.
And I'm getting ready to take off, so. After all, it's getting cold around here.
yeah, it certainly is kind of chilly today.
Yeah, well, not as bad as it was late last week.
No.
Okay,
no.
Well, I'll okay. check on those things.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck. Good luck. And have a good winter wherever the winds carry you. Next, let's talk with a listener on line one. Hi.
Hi. Our hard drive died about a week and a half ago, and Dell kindly sent us a new one, which we've installed. But I wondered if you knew of a good service to try to get what was on our old hard drive off of it.
And is it functional at all?
As far as I know, no.
No. So you're probably – what you would have to do there, ma'am, if it's non-functional, okay? You know, there are dead hard drives and then there are dead hard drives. And there are dead hard drives
yeah,
that are –
this one wouldn't boot up at all.
So it's completely gone then. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to find somebody who does what's called data recovery, right?
Uh-huh.
And if you, I'm not going to suggest particular firms, but if you go to Google and type something in, you'll find, you know, plenty of places that do data recovery. There's even some software you could give a try. But if the hard drive just won't work at all, that's not going to do you much good. The problem is that firms that do data recovery on actually dead hard drives, it's not cheap. It's not inexpensive to do that.
Uh-huh.
But they can probably get it off there. Let me tell you, they can, you know, recover data from, you know, hard drives that have been in a plane crash and ended up in a swamp and things of that nature.
They do it all the time on CSI, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So,
how come? But are there local firms that do that?
You know, I don't off the top of my head know anybody locally, but there may be. And again, what I'd do is I'd try the Google route and put in data recovery and, you know, try data recovery Illinois or data recovery Champaign-Urbana or data recovery Champaign and data recovery Urbana.
Uh-huh.
You may find somebody. There are some, you know, big national firms and regional firms that do it. So,
well, of course, Dell wants the hard drive back.
Really?
Yeah, they sent us a little thingy to mail it back to them.
So that they know that
it's really dead?
Is that it? Or
I'm not sure.
Why don't you ask them if they
wanted to know why it died.
Yeah,
maybe
they would check that out
or possibly refurbish it and resell it, you know, in some third world country. I don't know.
You ought to ask them if while they're looking at it, they would get your data off there.
Well, that would be the hope, but I kind of doubt that they do that as a service. But it's not, you know, we don't have huge amounts of data so much as pictures and things that are hard to replace, you know, and that's what we'd really like to get off.
Right, and that's what it comes down to, I think. What it will come down to for you, if the hard drive is in fact completely non-functional, okay, what it will come down to for you is it worth it to get that stuff? Do you have stuff on there that's you know, worth paying some hundreds of dollars to get off?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a trade. You have to kind of figure.
Right. You know, I'm not picking on you, okay?
And, right.
But it's a good
backing
opportunity to bring up. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Backing up would have been judicious.
You ought to have a backup. And what I tell people these days is, you know, there are many ways you can do this. And in fact, Vista and the new version of Apple's OS X that's coming out, they'll have backup components built into them, fancier than the ones even that they have now. But what I generally tell people these days is, look, You can go to the store, and for a couple hundred bucks, you can get an external hard drive, FireWire if you've got a Mac, or USB 2 if you've got a Mac or a Windows machine. Nice, fast, external hard drive that's just as big as the drive inside your computer. And you can use software on the Mac side like Carbon Copy Cloner or Norton Ghost on the Windows side. There are other options. Those just happen to be two that come to right into my mind. To clone your hard drive, so a complete copy of your internal hard drive, your main internal hard drive, out on that external drive. And if your internal drive goes bad and you've kept that clone current, all you have to do is shift it right back to the new hard drive you stick in that computer, and you're just where you were before.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that happened to me. Yeah. So it works, and it's a comforting feeling when you know you've got an exact copy of your hard drive goes bad, and you just slip a new one in there and move that copy over, and you're back in business like nothing ever happened.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I think now the machine was less than 2 years old, so we kind of weren't thinking about it being, you know.
Right. Yeah, and you don't know that. You know, when it happened to me a couple of years ago, the machine was less than a year old.
Yeah.
It just happened to be a bad batch of IBM hard drives that that I happened to get one of. So it can happen. Usually, you know, if it doesn't happen in the first year, it's not going to happen until the end of the life of the computer, right? But you never know. The old saying is that there are only two kinds of computer users: those who have had a hard drive fail, and those who are going to. So
there you go. So if it hasn't happened to you before, your time is limited.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's talk with another listener, caller on line two. You're on the air with Greg Klein. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering what experience you have with disk mirroring software. My computer has a 160 gig hard drive and a 120 gig hard drive internally.
Right.
And I'd like to mirror the one drive to the other.
And you want it to happen automatically.
Right.
So, I don't really have a suggestion for you. I don't have much experience with that, and don't know, you know, what software might be better than others. Again, as I, you know, when I talked to the lady before about cloning, you're not having that happen automatically necessarily.
No.
You're doing it yourself. Although, I don't know, you may be able to set something like Ghost to make a regular copying operation. But you know, I'm sure it wouldn't be very hard to find out which mirroring software people think is good and try that out.
The only ones I've been able to find when I Google the disk mirror are fairly expensive. I do have something that came with Partition Magic.
Uh-huh.
It's probably 2 or 3 years old now, but it doesn't look like Partition Magic has been upgraded either. So I have version 8 that I got at that time, and that seems to be what they're selling now. So I suppose that's a possibility. It does an instantaneous
right
backup. I'm not sure if it writes to the two files simultaneously or if it writes to one and then copies, but I was wondering if there was something else out there that's perhaps freeware that would be good.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I don't have a suggestion for that. But again, I'll say, it's not, if you're someone who can make yourself do it, it's not too hard just to clone it.
No.
You know, once a week or whatever. A lot of the commercial backup software you might buy also allows you to set it to do an automatic backup when the computer's idle. It just goes ahead and does it. So there are other ways you can do that without going to the extent of, you know, fully mirroring your drive all the time.
Yeah, well, that may be what I'll do. I'm going to look at this software I have a little more carefully, but backing up periodically, even on a daily basis, still leaves you vulnerable.
Right, right. To some extent, that's right.
For
most people, that's probably not, you know, the biggest deal in the world. But if you've got things you're doing that you consider vital, then it may be a big deal to you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's talk with another listener caller on line 3. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thinking about backing up, there are sometimes there are off-site things that you can back up to. For instance, I back up my genealogy to rootsweb.com,
right. Right.
And it will hide what it shows the general public, but I can retrieve it from off-site. Because we have to think about tornadoes and fire,
right.
And things,
right.
Like that. So, but if your hard drive isn't sitting on the desk attached to your computer, it's one more step to go get the thing and plug it in and back up. But the reason I was calling in was we have a Netgear wireless router, and suddenly the wireless part of it isn't working on either one of our laptops anymore. And we haven't had time to look at the instructions. I'm just wondering if it's likely the thing has died, or if it's one of these deals where I need to reset the channel. There's interference from something else. It works if I hardwire to it. If I have a cable going to it.
Right. So it's a wireless router.
Right.
It's got ports that you can plug an Ethernet cable into as well as your wireless activity.
Right. I can use it either way. At the moment, I'm plugged into it.
All right. And when you say, ma'am, that the laptops have stopped working, you mean they can't connect, or they connect and the connection drops, or?
Well, for a while, it kept dropping. Periodically, it would drop. But then both of them, neither one can connect to the wireless router now wirelessly. So it doesn't seem to be a problem on just the one computer. I'm suspecting that it's at the router level.
And they don't connect to the router at all. It's
right.
Not just that they don't connect to the Internet. They don't connect to the router at all.
Right. Yeah. My husband can use the wireless facility on his computer at work. So his wireless works on his computer.
His laptop works at work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's possible that the wireless function of that has gone bad, but... it can, but you know, generally these things are pretty robust these days, and it'd be an unusual thing for I think that to happen. It's more likely that you've gotten something that's interfering now with that, because you could connect to it and use it with a wire, right?
Right.
So I might check into what's going on in your. Do you live in town?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just see what's going on in your neighborhood there, and maybe you do want to get in there and try changing the channel and see if that does anything for you.
Okay, that'll require doing some homework to figure out how to change the channel.
Well, you should. You said it was a Netgear.
Yeah.
They should. When you bought it, they should have told you about what little documentation they provide these days. they should have told you. What web address? It should be a web interface. This is normally the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
They should have told you what web address to put into your browser to get into the router, and then your settings will come up in a browser window, and you can just it's just like working with a web page. You can click through those settings and find where the channel is.
Okay.
And. That's where you do it. All your other settings should be in there as well.
Okay. I'll see if I can figure that out. Thank you so much for your help.
Okay.
You're welcome. Let's take another call. Caller on line 1. Hi.
Hi, is that me?
Yeah, that's you. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm calling because I'm going to change cell phone providers. Right now I have a Kyocera, and... I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to be getting, but I was wondering if there was any way to download my telephone book electronically. Like, I have a Mac OS X. It's new, but it's not the one with the Intel chip or whatever.
So you want to get that the addresses or the phone numbers you put into your Kyocera there into your new cell phone.
Right, or right. Or at least into my computer.
Do you know, does it have any way of connecting, like by USB? Can you plug a USB cable into it and then plug that into your computer? I'll say two things in general term, three things, okay? One is some cell phones are able to connect by USB. You get a USB cable that has a small connector on one end that will plug it in, and you might look around on your cell phone to see if you see anything that looks like a port for this. It has a small connector on one end, and you plug it in, and then it's got a regular connector on another end, and you plug it into your computer, and you can get software. You'd have to look around for this, that may be able to get that out of there, okay?
Well, are you saying this would be a regular USB cable, or would have to be a special one?
Well, I imagine it would have to be a special one that has, not necessarily a special one for your cell phone. It depends on what your cell phone has, whether it has a port. But If it has a port, it's probably a mini port, okay? It's a little square as opposed to kind of a box, a rectangle. So what you do is you get a cable that's got a mini connector on one end and a regular connector on the other, and the mini connector plugs into the cell phone and the regular connector plugs into your computer. You get some software that somebody's probably made out there to move those addresses from one to the other, okay?
Okay.
That's one suggestion. Does that phone, the phone, does it have Bluetooth?
I don't think so.
Okay. If it had Bluetooth, you might, and you had a computer with Bluetooth, you might be able to send it over that way. Now, and the last thing I'd say is, do you think you're going to keep the same provider, or you don't know?
No, I'm not.
You're not. Okay. Provider. So that probably wouldn't do you any good. I was thinking, and if it had a card in it, some cell phones now have a, you know, a little.
No, it's.
PC card, a little SIM card. No, okay, so.
So I'm sure it doesn't have a card.
Those would be the two things I can think of then off the top of my head, as if it's got, because, you know, let's face it, what you need to do, right, is connect that cell phone to your computer somehow, right? So if it doesn't have a USB connection or it doesn't have Bluetooth, you don't really have any way to connect to your computer. Can you send email with that cell phone?
I think theoretically, though I'm not sure. If you can, then what?
Well, I was thinking you might be able to. Maybe not. I was thinking you might be able to somehow email those things to,
yeah,
to yourself, but and then you just get them as a text.
Never
file,
tried to use it that way.
Yeah,
that may
not be.
Yeah, and then I have another question. Is the clone you're talking about the same as a flash drive or different?
You mean cloning your hard drive?
Yeah.
No, wouldn't be a flash drive. That wouldn't be big enough. The suggestion I'm making is you get an external drive that connects to your computer by USB 2 or FireWire. One of the faster connection methods, right?
Okay.
And that hard drive, which has a little case and power supply of its own, it sits outside of your computer and connects by that port, that USB port,
okay,
and cable. And you make a clone of your internal hard drive onto that external hard drive. That's your backup.
Right.
And, in fact, you can get software like Norton Ghost that just does that for you. You tell it, I want to clone my internal drive onto this external drive. And so you've always got a copy, full copy of your hard drive on that external drive. And if you have a drive go bad in your computer, you can just move that copy back over to the new drive.
And
you're back in business.
What do these cost these days?
The a big hard drive?
The external hard drive.
Oh, the external hard drive? It depends on how big your internal hard drive is, but I was pricing 500 gigabyte hard drives the other day, and, you know, they're $200-$300, okay? if you got a 160 gigabyte hard drive or a 250 gigabyte hard drive, you know, it's a lot less than that. So,
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know if that sounds like a lot, but when you think about, you know, the lady who called earlier, she's got all these pictures that they may lose because, you know, their hard drive failed and they didn't have a backup of it. Well, that's, you know, that's kind of a, would you pay $100 to make sure that you didn't lose all your pictures? Probably most people would. It's kind of amazing. I think, as I mentioned earlier, I just bought a new Mac, and you know, I had to move stuff over from my old Mac, and I was really struck by. It took me about a day to decide what to move over and to get it all done and that kind of thing, and I was really struck by the fact that I had a lot of stuff on there that I didn't want to lose. You know, that I wanted, even though this is, you know, more of a recreational machine than the machine I work with, which is a Windows laptop, but. You know, I had lots of pictures, lots of songs, lots of email I was saving, I didn't want to lose that stuff. And it didn't used to be that way. You know, it used to be you'd get a new computer and you didn't worry all that much about it. Of course, you know, back when, you didn't worry all that much about it because we hadn't had computers that long, so we didn't build up all that stuff the way we do when we live in a house for a long time. Now you build up all that stuff, and
you got a basement, attic.
That's right, and they're all full, and you don't want
to. Garage.
There's stuff that you either don't want to throw out, or you don't want to have to decide to throw out, and you need to get it all moved over, and it's really different than the way it used to be. And it also, you know, suggests that you really ought to think about a backup system. And you don't necessarily have to copy the entire drive. That's an easy way of recovering if your hard drive goes bad. But really, you know, if you think about, you can sit and make a list of the essential things on there. And you could copy your documents and your pictures and your mail. You know, you could do that probably onto, depending on how many you had, onto CDs or DVDs, burning those. At least you've got a copy of that. Or you could get a smaller external hard drive. Don't clone your whole hard drive, but copy your pictures and your music and your documents and your mail, you know, so that at least you have the things that that you've made a list and thought that in the event of a my hard drive goes bad, I don't want to lose these.
Yeah. Also, that would be a way, it seems to me, of keeping things a little bit organized. You know, you want to, you know, when you do go to the cellar or the attic or wherever you're keeping your Christmas ornaments, you want to see the boxes labeled, you know, so that you don't have to go through every box to get out the Christmas ornaments.
That's right. Yeah.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein is our guest this afternoon on the program. This is the day of the month that we talk about computers. And so if you've got a question about computers, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's take another call now, a listener on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, I have a laptop, and I have two external hard drives, one with the FireWire and one with a USB 2, used for a lot of movie making and the like. And I would like to have a clone of my laptop's hard drive, and I'm wondering if I would have to exclusively use that external hard drive for the clone, or if I could store other stuff on it as well.
You mean if you had, say, an external drive that was bigger than the internal drive in your laptop?
Well, they are. They're both. The externals are both bigger than the one on my laptop.
Yeah, I think an easy way to approach that would be to partition that drive, right?
Okay.
So split it in two, right?
Uh-huh.
Format it so that one partition is if you want to make a clone, a real clone. Is as big as, a little bigger than, your internal laptop hard drive.
Okay.
And just put your clone on there. And
I
then
see.
You've got that other partition that you can do anything with. It's just storage space.
Yeah, I've never tried dividing that up. And I've never used Norton Ghost, which I have on my laptop, but I've never tried to use it. But will that sort of automatically do this copying?
Yes, that's software that's made for to clone your hard drive, among other things.
Okay.
So,
all right, thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Caller on line two, hi.
Hi. I am having a problem with a program called Audio Hijack Pro.
Uh-huh.
And I take a radio program every week with a timer in Audio Hijack Pro, so I don't even have to be here because sometimes I'm on that radio program. And so it goes straight from the radio into the computer, and then I make a CD of it. Now, last week I have a Mac, and I got an update to upgrade iTunes. When I did that, Audio Hijack Pro wanted to upgrade itself too. So I said yes, I would do that. And I had to enter the serial number from Audio Hijack Pro 1. And they told me in a message that if I didn't upgrade, that the recordings would only be for 10 minutes and then they would put static in.
Right.
Okay, so I upgraded, I thought, and I re-registered and everything, and that was Thursday. And then Saturday, when the radio program happened, I got just what they said would happen, 10 minutes of good stuff and 50 minutes of static interference. Now, I have an editing program, Audacity, but I'm not able to edit out. I thought I could maybe edit out the static, but it's put in too deeply.
Yeah.
So my question is, how can I clean up, if there's any way to clean up this CD recording through audio, through some kind of program?
Right, and I doubt it. Okay.
Okay.
I suspect that I don't use the pro version, but I happen to use Audio Hijack myself.
Uh-huh.
I suspect, I wouldn't stake my life on this or anything, but I suspect that the way they've done it they've done it to make people pay for the program, right?
Right.
That it's that in this for this particular recording, it's probably host it to an extent that it's not recoverable.
Mm-hmm.
And then have you contacted them?
Well, there's no way to contact them by phone, but I did email them
right.
this morning because I have a copy of my registration from Thursday, which
right.
should have been good on Saturday. So I'm hoping that they would have some way that I can recover this, some program. I'd even pay money for a program to take the static out.
Right. I'll be surprised if that's possible. I think the way that works is you get, X number of minutes. You said 10, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And then essentially it just makes gobbledygook, right?
Yeah.
So there's nothing there.
You can hear the program. It's just got static
in the background. It's just got static over it?
It's annoying, but
oh,
you can tell what they said.
Yeah. Well, let me reverse myself. Maybe there is a way then to get that filtered out.
Now,
would be the ones probably to ask about that.
Would it be possible to email them my file so that they could take it out and email it back? I know it's enormous, 60
well,
minutes.
Yeah,
but if I put it out on like iDisk, on would that hold it? iDisk gives me a
yeah. Depending on how much space you have out there, how big is the file?
I don't know.
Well, would it be possible to email it to them? Sure. The question is, would they take it and do anything to it, or could they take it and do anything to
well,
it? So that's really the question is whether, in fact, they could clean that up.
Yes.
There is software for cleaning up recordings and there are various kinds of
uh-huh.
of software for cleaning up recordings, and again, it's not something I could think of things I'd suggest maybe right off the top of my head. But if you Googled it, you could find Mac programs for doing that, and maybe that could happen. But what I would do first is just what you've done. I'd email their support and say,
yes.
Okay, this is the situation. Is there any way to clean this static out that you know of?
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be the ones who could probably tell you. And also, you need to sort out the registration code thing
well,
with them, because evidently that hasn't taken.
Now, I think I did, because
okay.
Once I discovered that it did this on Saturday, I went through the process again, and when I got to the last step,
right.
They told me, you don't need to upgrade, you already have.
Well,
but I then made a recording of a radio program on WILL last night, and it was fine.
It worked, okay.
It worked.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering if maybe the timers, which are a subset of Audio Hijack Pro, maybe that has to be redone or something. Maybe it was just with the timers and not with when you just do it, you know, one time.
That could be. Again, that would be a good thing to address to them.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I had some questions for them previously and found them to be pretty good to deal
good.
With. So.
Well, my last question then is you said you have Audio Hijack and I have Audio Hijack Pro.
Right.
It's a little too complicated for me to understand. I just do what I do with it, but there's a lot more, and I don't want it. Would Audio Hijack be sufficient to do what I do, and I could go back to the basic?
You just want to record?
I just want to record a radio show, and then I do take it into Audacity and cut off opening minutes that aren't, like if it doesn't start right on time and there's music, I take it off.
Yeah, it might be just fine. The only question I would have in my mind about that you'd want to check into is whether the timing additions work with the basic version as opposed to the pro version.
Okay, there we've got to leave it. We're out of time. A suggestion also for this listener in terms of, you know, that program that's got the static embedded in it. She might, if she doesn't get a good answer from the folks who make the program Audio Hijack, maybe what she could do is drop Jack Brighton an email, because Jack does our internet activities here, and I think that there are times when we have to clean stuff up. So just it could be a long shot.